Hey everybody, welcome to Bobby Osinski's Inner Circle. I'm Bobby Osinski and this is a show all about music, music production, and the music business. And this show is going to be a little different. Instead of a guest, I'm going to give you the wrap-up of the music business and the audio business of 2014. Let's look at a number of events that really kind of changed the business or made an impact on the business in 2014, for better or for worse. I've selected 10 separate storylines that really made a difference in the business, or at least got a lot of notoriety, a lot of press. But let's look at how they might really have some impact on maybe what you're doing. So the first thing is Apple purchasing Beats Electronics and Beats Music. I said at the time when it happened that I don't really think that Apple cares too much about the company Beats, and it could probably care less about the hardware, about the headphones, although I'm sure they'll incorporate them somehow. They already had a pretty good infrastructure for delivering music, so Beats Music is probably less of a concern, but what I really think that they're looking at was the talent. And by that I mean Jimmy Iovine, who was kind of the brains behind Beats Music and also an exec, a high up exec over at Universal Music, and Ian Rogers. And Ian Rogers has been for a long time kind of a behind the scenes guy for digital music in a number of different companies. And I think Apple wanted to get those guys because they're forward-looking and they're smart. And Apple had a brain drain over the last few years, and this is kind of a way to supplement the farm system, so to speak. So we may not see anything. Apple hasn't done much with Beats since they bought them in May, but I think in 2015 you're going to see some interesting things happen, both with the headphones and with the Beats hardware. I think you'll see something with that, and at least they'll try it. They'll put their toe in the waters and see how much money they can make with it. But I think what you'll really see is a new Beats Music, and it might not be called that. It will be called something else, and it'll be a new Apple streaming service. I think it's going to be a high-res streaming service, but we'll see. But 2015 is the year when that all happens. The second storyline is that streaming is way, way up, and downloads are way, way down. And what's significant about that is that this was the year, 2014 was the year, that the consciousness of the music buying public was finally changed when it comes to streaming audio. There was a threshold that was reached where everybody kind of saw the light and said, well, wait a second, renting music or having access to as much music as we want is a whole lot better than owning it. That being said, there's still a whole lot of CDs being bought. There were over 200 million last year that we could count, and there's still $1 billion worth of downloads. So those businesses are still happening, although they're declining, and they're declining very quickly, while streaming is going up rather quickly as well. I think that what's going to happen is, in 2015, instead of the battles between which is better, which is winning, meaning streaming or CDs, physical product, or downloads, I think that's all going to go away, and it's going to be which streaming platform is the one that's winning. And we can speculate on that probably for a whole show, but it'll be interesting. 2015 is when we'll start to see those wars really break out. Story number three is that YouTube's Music Key service, speaking of subscription services, Music Key was finally announced. And this has been rumored for more than a year, but finally we get a chance to see it, although not many of us, because it's kind of in a low-key beta right now. It was announced and very closely held in beta. That being said, we do know a lot about it, and it should be quite interesting. One of the things that we know is that, first of all, you basically get no ads. So when you go to YouTube to listen to your music, there are no ads. That's kind of cool. We also know that we don't have to be online. You have offline listening, and that's pretty cool. And also you have access to the entire Google Play catalog, and that's some 20-some million songs and videos as well. So for that $9.99 a month, you get an awful lot. So what we'll see is next year, YouTube Music Key will probably be a major player amongst the platforms for streaming audio. And we'll see, again, once you get into things like user interface, that really makes a difference. You can have all the features in the world, but if the user interface isn't slick enough or easy enough, then that doesn't mean much at all. So we'll see how that works. We really don't have a good idea of how any of that fits into the grand scheme of things right now. Story number four, Taylor Swift pulls her music catalog from Spotify. Well, I put this at number four, but really it could have gone down the list somewhat. When it's all said and done, it's not that important. However, it really got a lot of press, so it's worth talking about. Taylor Swift, of course, pulled her entire catalog off of Spotify and then went on a rant that she wasn't making enough out of the streams and, you know, the whole thing that a lot of artists talk about. But what she didn't do is pull her music off of other streaming services, which is sort of a contradiction. Well, it's not sort of. It really is a contradiction. If you're going to pull it off Spotify, you should pull it off everywhere else for streaming. That didn't happen. So what's the hubbub about? Taylor Swift owns part of her own record label, and that record label is trying to be acquired. They want to sell. So the more money they make, the better their bottom line looks, the more they can sell for. The best way that they could beef up their bottom line is to sell lots of CDs. That's why this whole thing was happening. She wanted to sell a bunch of CDs and did a great job of it between the publicity for pulling her music off of Spotify. And it wasn't just the new CD, it was all of her catalog. Between that and the fact that a lot of her fans couldn't get her music, the new music, any other way than to go buy the CDs, that accomplished the mission. But in terms of standing up for artists' rights, nah, that didn't quite work. Most everybody in the know knew about it already. So, like I say, I have this at number four. It could probably be way, way down, though, because as far as impact, it really wasn't much. Number five was U2's free iTunes album giveaway and how it backfired. And really what came out of that was that both U2 and Apple were sort of tone deaf to their audience. They didn't quite realize that giving something away that someone doesn't want isn't much of a gift. So that's the whole thing. Music isn't valuable unless somebody wants it. You can give it away all you want, but people just feel like it's spam if it's something that they're not concerned with. And that's exactly what happened here. So yes, they had their album, I don't know what it was, 57 million or something, people that had downloaded it and actually used it in their iTunes account. But that being said, a lot of people just listened once and that was it. So I don't know if they really accomplished what they wanted to, except for the fact that U2 got a lot of money from Apple. So it was worth it for them, but it didn't really endear them to their fans or to people that weren't their fans very much. Storyline number six is Sony's Orchard subsidiary did a direct deal with Sirius XM. And why is this important? Well, this is kind of the opening shot of something that Sony's been trying to do. Both Sony Music and Sony ATV, their publishing company, has wanted to go around the PROs, the performance rights organizations like ASCAP, BMI, and in this case, Sound Exchange. They've been wanting to go around them and do direct deals for a while. And this is kind of the very first one that actually gets done like that. What I think is going to happen is ASCAP and BMI have been the only way that you can collect money for radio for a long time, but radio is less and less important. It still is very important, but less so. And I think ASCAP and BMI are probably as strong right now as they're ever going to be, and that their influence is going to wane. And this is just the beginning of it happening. So that's why this deal was important. In the grand scheme of things, it didn't really make much money. It's not really a big deal for most of the people involved. But once again, it sort of gives us an idea of what's going to come. I don't think this is good for artists, by the way. Artists will not really benefit from things like this. Why? Well, if Sony gets the money without a performance rights organization in the middle, they're going to find ways not to give it to you because they're really good. And not just them, but every major label is really good at not paying royalties. So that's just another way for them to either cross-collateralize the money that you owe them or just find ways not to give it to you. So I don't think this is really in the songwriter's or artist's favor, but it is a look into the future, I think. Storyline number 7 is all about the Turtles' legal victories against SiriusXM and Pandora. And this is regarding songs that were recorded before 1972. There's a loophole in a copyright law that basically says they don't have to pay on songs that were recorded before 1972. Of course, everybody that has music done before 1972 is up in arms about that because, hey, it's not fair. And the Turtles, meaning Mark Volman and Howard Kalin, the two singers, finally brought a suit against SiriusXM, which they won. And they've been winning small victories against SiriusXM and Pandora, and now it looks like they're going to win the whole thing. What this means is there's going to be hundreds of millions of dollars in payouts as a result. It also means that the oldies formats that you hear on just about everywhere, they were there because they're fairly cheap. They're not going to be cheap anymore. And I think what you're going to find is a lot of those formats are going to go away. So that's a look into the future as well as what's going to happen. Storyline number 8, Tidal and Deezer both launch in the U.S. Now, these are two European streaming services. Deezer's been around for quite a while. They're a French service, and a lot of people like them as an alternative to Spotify, especially in Europe. But they're finally in the U.S., as is Tidal, which is a fairly new service, but it's all high-res. It's all CD quality, as is Deezer. Deezer has a tier that is all high-res. And what I think this is going to do is put pressure on all the other streaming services, the Spotify's, the Pandora's, the iTunes Radio, the Music Keys, just about everything you can think of. It's going to put pressure on them to add a high-res tier. And I think you're going to see pretty soon, this is the beginning of MP3s going away, believe it or not. Once we have lots of bandwidth, we don't need MP3s anymore. So I think this is the beginning of high-res audio common for everybody. Again, just the beginning, but we're going to see it more and more in the future. Storyline number 9 is Billboard, rather a stodgy organization, but of course their charts have been the Bible of recorded music. They jumped into the future this year. They did it a few different ways. First of all, the Billboard 200 chart, which is the Bible of album sales. Forever, that's been based on radio airplay, it's been based on sales at record stores, but finally, they're coming around to also adding streams and downloads, which is really, really important because, let's face it, the way we consume music has really changed, and it's important that we find new ways to measure these things, and since Billboard charts are the Bible, thankfully, they've kind of jumped into the future with everybody else. They also did a couple of other things along the same lines with Twitter, where they incorporated social media into a couple of charts. First of all, they have the Artist 100, and that's all about social media. That kind of blends sales and social media and airplay and everything else into one. So that's the Artist 100. But there's also two Twitter charts, one called the Trending 140 and another called Twitter Emerging Artists. So Billboard now is kind of up with the times, which is really nice to hear. And finally, the last big storyline is a Prince return to Warner Brothers. Now, why is this a big deal? And you might think, wait a second, okay, Prince, he's been a superstar for a long time, so what? Well, the fact of the matter is, he fleed from Warner Brothers, Warner Music Group, and created that symbol. You know that crazy symbol that he used to have? The artist formerly known as Prince. The reason why he did that is to get around the copyright laws, because guess who owned the brand Prince? It was the record label. It was Warner Brothers. So he wanted to go out on his own. He was the first to do it yourself, DIY. What this goes to show you, the fact that he's back with Warner Brothers, is first of all, his record sales are flagging badly. So he's going back with the major label to kind of goose those, or hopefully goose those. And the real problem is they're flagging for everybody. So it doesn't necessarily mean that Warner Brothers is going to be able to do much more than he's been able to do. But the second thing is that having the infrastructure of a major label really is a good thing. Yeah, you pay for it, and it certainly isn't hassle-free. But the good thing about a record label is they do have the infrastructure for worldwide marketing and worldwide distribution. And now they got a lot of social media clout going on. And they can do things that you can probably do yourself, especially with the staff that Prince could have. But the fact of the matter is, they can probably do it better because they have the elements of scale on their side. So in fact, again, there's an infrastructure that an independent artist, even someone as big as Prince, they just can't do the same thing. And we've seen this before. Actually, Nine Inch Nails returned to Columbia in 2013. And the thing about that is, if anybody was good at social media and DIY, it was Trent Reznor. Trent was the best. He was kind of the poster child for all this stuff. So if he goes back to a major label, that kind of tells you something. It tells you that, in fact, at a certain point, a major label is worth having. Even though we all hate them and we all say they're going to go away, I don't think so. They're going to be around for a while because they have things that every artist needs, especially once you reach a certain level. So those are the 10 storylines in the music business that I thought were a big deal last year. Now let's look over at audio. There are a number of things that happened in the audio side of the business in this last year. And the first thing I saw was the fact that there were more vintage emulation plugins. So in other words, vintage gear emulators. And there were some really good ones that came out. The EMS VCS3 synth, for one. So this was the famous synth that you heard in all the Who records in the beginning. You know, Baba O'Reilly and all those things. It was an EMS VCS3. And the cool thing about those is that they had the first sequencer built in. So that's why it wasn't the sounds, it was a sequencer that they had. So now there's a plug-in emulator, which is very cool. The other thing I liked is a couple of really good, well, actually, there are four really good emulations of outboard gear that I always used to use. One is Soundtoys came out with something called Little Primal Tap, which is very much like the old Lexicon Primetime. And of course, that was one of the first digital delays that you could find in just about every studio. And it really has a sound. The sound can be very distorted. Since it was only an 8-bit delay also, the delays sound fairly natural because they don't have a lot of bandwidth to them. Really, that's something that we kind of liked back then, that as digital delays got better, they actually got too clean. So this came out, the Little Primal Tap by Soundtoys, and it's very cool. Another one that I really liked was, well, a couple of them from Eventide, the Ultra Channel and the Ultra Verb. And these have presets from all their old harmonizers, the 910, 949, and also the Reverb, the 2016. All those were great items that when they're around, I don't think we appreciated them as much. But now you can get that vintage sound, that vintage Eventide sound through both of those plugins. The Ultra Channel, which is a full-on channel with the compressor, EQ, harmonizer, delay, very cool. What it doesn't have is reverb, and that's what you have the Ultra Reverb for. So both of those are very cool. One that I really love that came out, and of course this is something we all used in the 80s, it was the AMS RMX16 Reverb. The AMS Reverb was one of those, especially on English records, you heard it all the time. Everybody loved it. Problem was, they were really hard to fix. So once they died, they never came back to life, which is a big problem, and eventually AMS went out of business. It was bought by Neve, and I'm not so sure if you can buy an AMS RMX16, a real hardware unit now or not. But UAD came out with a version of it that was done by the original programmer. And boy, it sounds good. So I'm really happy that that's around. Another one that's very cool, also from Universal Audio, is the Valley People Dynamite. The Valley People Dynamite is kind of a combination unit. It's a compressor, it's a limiter, it's a de-esser, and it's a gate. But it's very aggressive sounding. And we didn't like it back in the day because in many cases it was too aggressive sounding, but now it sounds very cool. And I use it on snare drums all the time when I want that extra smack, and it really gives it to you. Anyway, those are some of the very cool plugins that came out this year that really caught my attention. Another thing that happened was kind of a resurgence in consoles. There's a lot of different ones out there. Of course, API has The Box. That's been out for a little while. That's kind of like a $16,000, $17,000 version for the home studio. And that's very cool. Trident has their Model 88 that came out, which really is cool. It's such a big bang for the buck, about $25,000, but I think it has 32 channels and both inline and dual monitors. So you get an awful lot of inputs if you want. SSL came out with what I think is one of the best ideas ever, and that's their XL desk. Why is it cool? Well, it has 18 500 series slots in it. So basically, it's a console with 500 series slots. I think that's brilliant. Harrison came out with their 950X. Harrison, of course, in the 80s and early 90s, that was a big, big part of pop sound. Of course, if you listen to any Michael Jackson record, the big one's Thriller, done on a Harrison 32C. So anyway, Harrison's trying to get back in the business with a small console, a 950X. And Jeff Daking has been making Trident A-Range modules for a long, long time. And now he actually did his own console, which is built to put a digital controller in. So in other words, it's analog. You slip your controller of choice in, and it's digital as well. So that's pretty cool. But all of a sudden, we're seeing a resurgence in these mid-size, small to mid-size consoles. Big consoles aren't coming back. You can still get them if you want. But I think what we're seeing is there's a need for small to mid-size consoles. And because of that, you're finding these big console makers that are kind of jumping in. A number of other things happened in the last year. Guitar Center is always in the news. Guitar Center was sued for unfair labor practices. And what happened was four of their stores voted for a union. They unionized. GC pretty much drugged their feet from actually following through on what the union wanted. So as a result, the AFL-CIO came back and sued them. And this is still going on, but we're going to see this play out in court. Now, before that, what happened was management control of GC was taken over by one of their creditors from Bain Capital, and this was taken over by Ares Management. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. Ares Management wants to get its money out, and it'll be interesting to see what will happen in the next year. I think that now the economy is doing well, we're going to start to see, well, perhaps some of these stores sold off. We might see some downsizing happening. We might see some tightening. We're already seeing this, some tightening of inventory. So Guitar Center is a company in flux. Another neat thing that I thought happened was that Gibson Guitars moved their showroom into the old Tower Records store on Sunset Boulevard in West Hollywood. Tower Records had a store that this was the mecca of all music stores when you were buying records and CDs. And of course, Tower's been out of business for 10 years in the United States. They're still around in Japan. But this particular building really hasn't had a good tenant since then. One of the things that happened is the city of West Hollywood was trying to make it a historic site because it is very unique. And now Gibson is going to use it as their West Coast showroom and also as a showplace. They're going to have acts there as well. So that should be cool. And that's one of the cool things that Gibson has done. I think that's very neat. One of the other storylines is that Avid was delisted from NASDAQ. So basically, the stock market kicked them out. Why they kick them out? Well, it couldn't pay the bills, and the fact that the stock went from a high of 67 down to below $5, and they were delisted. If you're on Wall Street, this is the worst thing that could ever happen. If you're in the music business, nobody cares. But what it shows us is there's some instability within Avid. And this is the company we all love to hate to love. And it's the one company we use all their stuff. But the fact of the matter is, they're kind of on thin ice. So if there were a competitor that would come in, now would be the time, but there doesn't look to be on the horizon. That's why the next NAMM show will be so interesting, to see if, in fact, a new competitor to Pro Tools arises. And finally, another thing that happened was Fender started to sell direct via their website. And of course, their dealers are up in arms over this because that's the last thing they want. They don't want a manufacturer to compete with them, and who can blame them? Especially since it costs some money to be a Fender dealer. You can't just say, I'm a dealer, buy a couple of guitars. You have to buy in. The buy-in is every year. So it's one of those things where dealers are upset. Fender tried this last year when they basically put the custom shop online, and dealers were not happy then, but they're even less happy now. Fender hasn't rolled it out too hard in 2014, but the upcoming NAMM show will give us an idea of what their policy is really going to be, so keep a look on that as well. Another big thing that happened this year on January 1st, 2014, was the institution of the loudness standard called the COM Act. What this means is, remember how you used to listen to television, watch television, and you'd be watching a program, and all of a sudden a commercial would come on and it'd be so compressed, it'd be so much louder than what you were just listening to, the program you're just listening to. Well, everybody complained about that. So many people complained that Congress actually did something and they passed the COM Act a few years ago and it went into effect on January 1st, the beginning of the year. Basically what this is, it's a new way to measure loudness and it keeps the level the same. And this is really serious because you could lose your license to broadcast if you are not in compliance with this. So you'll find when you go from channel to channel, and there used to be differences. You'd go from one channel, especially cable channels, one channel to another, and one would be louder and one would be softer. Now they're all pretty much the same, as are all the commercials, and that's due to the COM Act. So you might want to check that out more. I think we talked about it in one of the earlier podcasts this year. Finally, let me give you my top five pieces of gear for the year. And these are the things that caught my attention I thought were really neat. The first one is the SSL XL desk. And that's something we talked about before. And that's because of the 18500 series modules that are built in. I think it's a great idea. The other thing is a software plugin that I really, really like. It's called the Sample Magic Magic AB plugin, and it allows you to do AB tests. You put it on your stereo bus, and you can do AB listening tests against up to 9 other tracks besides the track that you're mixing. It's like $57, and it's well worth it. You can do all sorts of things. Instead of listening to the whole track, you can just pick a piece of it. It's great. It's a terrific mixing tool, and it's something everybody should have if they mix a lot. The third thing is the Persona Studio Live RM. Persona has this series of consoles called Studio Live, and they're digital consoles. You get a tremendous bang for the buck. They're really terrific. That being said, they now came out with a console in a box, and basically what it is, it's a box with just inputs, and all the control surface is based around your computer or around your iPad. Of course, what that will do is that will lower the price of getting a lot of inputs and getting a lot of processing power, because one of the things that costs the manufacturer a lot are controllers. So in other words, any kind of knobs or pots and things like that, faders, those are expensive. If you get rid of those, the price can really come down. The Persona Studio Live RM is one of the first to do that. And I think we've seen Behringer come out with something that's very similar as well. I mentioned this before, but the UAD, the Universal Music AMS RMX16, I think is a fantastic plugin. It has a sound that's very different than anything else. Once again, if you want that 80s drum sound, that's the best way, fastest way to get it. The RMS-16 sounds really close to the original hardware unit, and it's one of the things that makes everybody smile the first time they plug it up. It's very cool. And finally, Blue did something with headphones that I've been wondering if it would ever happen. They made a set of powered headphones, and these are called the MoFi headphones. It's kind of the next generation of things, and basically you have three different selections on your headphones, and you can have them powered with normal bandwidth. You can have the low end extended or boost, or you can just bypass them completely. And they also change the way the headphones fit around your head. So it's really taking everything to the next level. So check those out. It's the Blue MoFi headphones. And I have a special mention. And what it is the Audionamics ADX tracks. And what this enables you to do is to isolate vocal tracks or solo tracks from stereo mixes. And of course, everybody's wanted to do that for a long time, and this really does it well. Not only does it take the vocal out of a mix, it allows you to change the level. If you don't want to take it out of the mix completely, and you just want it a little lower or a little higher, this enables you to do it. And boy, this is so much better than having to go back and remix. Check that out. It's called the Audionamics ADX track, and it's very cool. I don't know how they do it, but they do. I want to thank you all for listening to the podcast. This is the first year of it. This is episode number 37. It went by really fast, and it's been a lot of fun. There's going to be a lot of really great guests next year that I hope you really enjoy. And I'll continue with the commentary. Everybody seems to enjoy that, so I will continue with it, and hopefully it'll get better and better. Tell me if it doesn't. I want to thank Steve Cherubino, who's the host of the EDM Producer Podcast at edmmr.com. Steve is really responsible for this podcast. He sent me an email and said, you should do your own podcast. He basically was listening to the Audio Nowcast, which is a podcast that's been on for 6 or 7 years now. What that is a panel of audio geeks from different disciplines. And we have a good time. It comes out every couple weeks or so. You might want to look on Facebook for that. It's Audio Nowcast. Anyway, he heard me on the Audio Nowcast and he said, I think you should have your own. And I've been thinking about something like this anyway, but he was the impetus. He put it over the top because I said, I don't have the time to do this. He said, I'll help you. I'll do the dirty work. So thank you, Steve, for putting this whole thing in motion. Thanks for listening and being my inner circle. Remember, if you have any questions or comments, and I love your comments, please send them to questions@bobbyoinnercircle.com, questions@bobbyoinnercircle.com. You can listen to other episodes of Bobby Osinski's Inner Circle by going to bobbyosinski.com and select the podcast tab, or you can go right to bobbyoinnercircle.com, or you can find us on iTunes or Stitcher. bobbyosinski.com and on Bobby Inner Circle, you'll find a sign-up form for my newsletter for alerts for new podcasts. This is Bobby Osinski. Thanks a lot for listening. I'll see you next time.